A United Nations scientific panel on climate change released a report earlier this month that warned of a worsening crisis by 2040. Here in Hawaii, scientists have been raising the red flag about global warming and sea level rise and the need to deal with protecting our natural resources. University of Hawaii geologist Chip Fletcher sat down to talk about the climate change study, what it means for Hawaii, and how he views the world headlines.
Well, the recent report basically identified that the aspirational target of 1.5 degrees Celsius, which was defined in Paris, the Paris Climate Agreement in 2015, looks like it's not really going to be attainable unless we do a couple of things. Number one, the entire all humanity on the planet has to come together onto what you might call an all-hands-on-deck situation and severely, immediately, and dramatically reduce carbon emissions. Number two, even that won't be enough. We are then going to have to remove carbon dioxide from the atmosphere in what's known as negative emissions. So there's no real sign that humanity is mustering the motivation and the political will to attempt to mitigate this problem. In fact, we see signs quite the opposite. And so really the logical conclusion is that we're going to not stop warming at 1.5 degrees C. And then the next question is, what about 2 degrees C? And although the report doesn't go into that in a lot of detail, those of us who follow this know that we're currently actually on a pathway towards 3.5 degrees Celsius of warming by the end of the century, which is actually a devastating amount of warming.
Right, and that's, I think, what the report flags, right? This kind of dire sets of consequences.
Yeah, that's right.
Doesn't look good at all.
No, it doesn't look good. I mean, a number of things will happen even at 1.5 degrees C, it's still a very dangerous situation. We have already created a very dangerous situation with just 1 degree C. What is happening now and what will continue to happen is that the tropics will expand. And communities of people in the tropics will experience growing drought, deepening drought. The drought will become longer and drier. We see already strengthening tropical cyclones. We see records being set for extreme rainfall. We see 4 global bleaching events having taken place since 1998. And prior to that, there were no global bleaching events. No one had ever heard of such a thing. We see nearly 50% of all species no longer found in their natural ecosystem. That's called local extinction, having had to migrate away to find or to recover temperature and precipitation and seasonal patterns that have gone missing now at their natural ecosystem locations. And it goes on and on. There is a rising tide of human refugees, internal refugees within their own borders and external refugees. As internal refugees no longer find asylum within their own nation, they seek other nations to help them, and other nations are already stressed in this world of overpopulation. And so there's political turmoil. This gives rise to authoritarian candidates for government. All this is currently happening. The Syrian crisis has its roots in the deepest, longest drought in 1,000 years, according to tree ring analysis, and that drove farming families out of the hinterlands of Syria and into the urban areas where they started a civil war.
I was struck by the extreme temperatures in areas that they just said, you know, these places just won't be maybe habitable anymore.
Yeah, there's no maybe about it. Habitability on large parts of the African continent, the Middle East, portions of the American Southwest, Central America, areas of India is already very questionable during certain times of the year. And we will see the population of humans that currently exist in dangerous heat conditions, which are defined as 95 degrees Fahrenheit or more more than 20 days per year. We're going to see that population of humans more than triple by mid-century. So we are moving towards billions of people no longer being able to safely live where they have lived historically. And, of course, that leads to more migration, more refugees.
Where do they go?
Yeah, exactly.
And so we're out here in the Pacific, and we can do what we can do. But if everybody else isn't buying into it, isn't on the same page, is it a lost cause?
No, it's not a lost cause. Some key people are not buying into it. The current federal administration for our country, apparently Angela Merkel of Germany, is sort of backing away from being the leader she had been in the past. But there are also the emergence of a new class of leaders. We see the U.S. Climate Alliance, which consists of, I think it's 15 states and over 500 cities that are still committed to achieving the Paris Climate Agreement, the Paris Accord. And they constitute something like the third largest economy in the world. I'm not certain about that number, but anyway, it's a significant number of people still in the U.S., despite our federal leaders committed to achieving this. And we have some outstanding leadership from Governor Brown in California and Governor Ige right here in Hawaii. And Hawaii is now a leader globally in how to mitigate and how to adapt to climate change. Sea level rise is getting a lot of press. There's a lot of attention paid to it, thank goodness. One of the wonderful things about being in Hawaii is that we don't need to convince a distracted media. We don't need to convince a doubting political class. Everybody is on board. The media is on board. The politicians all get it. Climate change is right now, and let me back up, sea level rise right now is playing out in our beaches. Our models show, for instance, on Sunset Beach, that whole stretch of shoreline on the North Shore, there's something like 18 homes that have seawalls. With only 1 foot of sea level rise, that jumps almost 100%. And with that little amount of sea level rise and that dramatic increase of numbers of homes that are vulnerable to erosion and come within the scope of an emergency permit, applying for a seawall, if you will, it means that where sea level rise is currently playing out is on our beaches. And then at 1 foot to 2 feet of sea level rise, we will start to see sea level rise playing out in storm drain backflow onto our roads and intersections, especially when it rains heavily at high tide. We'll see flooding in areas where commuters are trying to get home. And then from 2 to 3 feet of sea level rise, we will see perpetual flooding in some isolated areas that never dry out. Around 3 feet of sea level rise, we will see the water table perpetually sitting above the land surface, creating new wetlands, a water table that is polluted with cesspools and sewage septic tanks, a water table that in Iwale and elsewhere in Honolulu is polluted with World War II diesel fuel and gasoline. So it's different stages of sea level rise sort of translating into different sectors of our awareness, different sectors of our community. But right now, it is in full swing on our beaches, causing beach erosion.
Right. And you can just see it coming with our roads. I mean, if Ala Moana becomes a dike or something.
Yeah.
And you know, we're talking about the Alawai and the flood control mm-hmm. projects there. Mm-hmm. And there are discussions about, okay, if the Army Corps of Engineers goes up to increase the capacity and people don't want a 4-foot-high wall, you raise the Alawai Boulevard. You know, those types of discussions are starting.
Yeah. There will be lots and lots and lots of these types of discussions. How do we protect ourselves from these issues? Where is it worth spending millions of dollars to put sand on the shoreline in order to make sure there's a beach there? Where do we want to build seawalls instead and prevent any beach from accumulating? Where and how are we going to mitigate the problem of groundwater flooding, groundwater inundation? Are we going to spend money re-outfitting our storm drains so that maybe they have gates that close at high tide and then open, and that's only going to be good for a few decades? Are we going to put 4-foot high walls around the Alawai? If we need 4 feet of additional protection, does it have to be vertical walls? Could it be an embankment, sort of a levee? Could it be more of a gathering place where maybe you have a running path, you have cantilevered decks, you have even mangroves, which are an invasive species, but, you know, do some good when it comes to flooding. There are lots and lots of different sort of community design features that need to be discussed and debated. There's a cost-benefit ratio. There is an aesthetic aspect, all of this.
The drinking water thing, though, I mean, that's how far out is that?
So drinking water is not threatened by sea level rise currently because we gather our drinking water from higher elevation than our current projections of sea level rise will reach. However, there has been a long-term decline in rainfall. If this continues and perhaps deepens, we need to worry about recharge. Computer models are not in agreement as to what our future rainfall situation will look like. Some models suggest that we will have localized areas of more rain and broad areas of less rain.
I mean, we're already seeing kind of a flip-flop, wetter summers and drier winters. And I don't know if that's just because it's the type of year that we're in.
Well, that's just one year. Data point. You can't make a trend from one data point. Even 2 or 3 or 4 or 10 data points, it's
over the span of time, yes.
Right, it gets risky to make, to draw too much of a conclusion from that. But I think what we can say is things are looking different than they had looked in the past. We're not sure what the trend is going to be.
I'm just struck by whenever there's a lot of rain and it's not maybe even a hurricane, that the freeways flood.
Yeah. Well, so we've seen these, what we're referring to now as rain bombs. We saw one on the north shore of Kauai. We saw one on the south shore of Oahu. We saw record-breaking rain associated with a hurricane that hit the Big Island. All of this is consistent with a warmer atmosphere, which holds more water vapor. And so the probability of these record-setting rain events increases with global warming. Extreme rainfall has increased around the world, something like 12%. And that is a different issue than drinking water and recharging our aquifers. These intense rainfall events tend not to be very good at recharging aquifers because they quickly run off. To recharge an aquifer, you need a good long soak of several days, hopefully even longer than that, for the water to soak down. So if we are going to see a shift in our precipitation from or toward extreme rainfall events, do we need to start building storm drain or storm water catchment systems? Do we need more reservoirs and more dams in the upper portions of our watersheds? Should we work harder at capturing this rain because it may be an important drinking water resource, or not even drinking water, there are lots of other uses of fresh water that don't need to meet the same clean standards as potable water. We're still in the easy phase. We're talking about it. At what point are we going to actually start spending money, which means we are committing towards taking certain actions?
Fletcher will continue this conversation at a forum sponsored by Zocalo Town Square Thursday night. It's at the Artistry, a community space in Kaka'ako. It will include the city's chief resiliency officer, Josh Dambro, and Robert Lempert, contributing scientists to the United Nations panel on climate change. The focus will be what Hawaii can teach the rest of the world about dealing with climate change. For links, check out our webpage at hawaiipublicradio.org.